This is the Send Talks podcast from Galdards.
Hello and welcome to Send Talks. This is a re-recording that we're doing as per your request of the three stages. And we're going to start with the application for a needs assessment. So I'm here with Adam.
Hello, everyone.
And first of all, we're going to take a step back. Before you make an application for a needs assessment, usually parents are in a space that are really quite difficult, aren't they? And they kind of find themselves thinking, what do I do? Which then leads to the application for a needs assessment. So for the parents listening to this, Adam, what would you say? What would be kind of the spot that people are in when they're thinking, I need some kind of help, but I don't need what kind, I don't know what kind of help it is that I need. What would that look like? Just so that they can recognise if they're actually in that spot.
Okay, so I think it really depends on the child in question. So I think in some cases it could be is clear from birth that a child has significant disabilities. Yeah. And in those kind of cases, you'd expect the local authority to really decide itself to make a EHC needs assessment. So for listeners, that's an educational health and care needs assessment. With other cases, the general idea is you go to your mainstream nursery or school, and during that period of time your child may be identified as having special educational needs or learning needs, which might require extra provision. Usually the way that looks in a kind of nursery or mainstream school is extra provision through additional support by, say, a class teacher or maybe a learning support assistant in that classroom. And at that stage it might also lead to referrals for other services. If, say, a child has been identified with a potential need like autism, the process for a referral might happen at that stage. Or if a child, say, language is behind, you might expect a referral to be made to speech and language therapy services. And again, if they display, say, sensory needs or motor issues, so sensory needs is difficulty coping with busy, noisy environments, then you might expect a referral to be made to OT services. But the general idea is, within the nursery or school, first of all, you identify the need and you try and meet that need within the classroom. If the child is not making progress at that stage, then the idea is that you might up that provision. So every school has something called a SEND plan or SEND policy, which you should be able to find on their websites. Mm-hmm. Most nurseries have them as well. And that basically outlines how a school identifies needs, how it meets them within their resources, and how basically it upskills that to the stage where effectively you'd request an EHC needs assessment. Now, the most important thing to say here is, in some cases, it might be quite clear early on in a child's nursery or school that they have needs which are way over that a school can meet. So in those kind of cases, a parent or the school should be thinking to themselves, is our SEND plan going to work? Or is it a stage where the child's needs are so great, we should be making that application for an EHC needs assessment at that stage?
Yeah. And, you know, what you've been discussing so far is for children generally, like in my mind that when you were discussing it, I was thinking quite a young child, because those things are quite clear. But sometimes SEN kind of jumps forward a little bit later on, doesn't it? I mean, we have lots of parents come to us around year four, maybe with kind of when they're learning to read and write properly, like with dyslexia, dyscalculia, or maybe some dyspraxia. So just to let you guys know that there isn't a time limit or a time deadline as to when you have to apply for an education healthcare needs assessment. It may be when your child is four, when it's very evident that child is having issues. It may be when the child's 10. It may be when they're 15. It may be when they're 18. Don't forget that this regime, the SEND regime, runs from 0 to 25. And so all of our children are different and they can run into problems at really different stages.
Yes, and I think with that, as Salasay was kind of outlining, you tend to find that there's particular types of needs where they're identified later, but actually they need to be addressed very quickly. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, you have cases of, say, young people with autism who are identified fairly late in their primary or early secondary education. But often in those cases, those children may have been suffering for many years, but the need hasn't been identified, and they may have masked through that time. And it might be that school and parent school is not quite seeing that need, but a parent has really seen it at home. And I think in those kind of situations, parents should be thinking to themselves, I need to have a discussion with the school, but if the school aren't going to make that application for an EHC needs assessment themselves, then I may want to do it myself. And parents have the right to do that at any stage. It's obviously helpful to have your school support.
Exactly.
But how do I say this? The world of SEN changes quite quickly. We are much better at identifying needs, and we're much better at seeing need quicker. But the reality is understanding of need is still not quite there. So you have a lot of teachers and schools who may not really understand the kind of profile of your child's needs and why they may not require, why they may require provision.
Yeah, no, that's completely right. And that kind of deals, guys, with the who can make the application. So sometimes we have parents coming to us, don't we, Adam, and they say, well, the school's not doing the application, so I'm stuck. But you can make the application yourself. And like Adam said, if you have the school support, then that's really good. It's fantastic. Because coming from a local authority, you know, being an ex-local authority lawyer, the first thing that local authorities tend to do when they've got an application for an education healthcare needs assessment is go to the school. What do the school say? And a lot of the time, you do get refusals, and they say, well, there's not enough information. And the information has come from the school. They've made an app, you know, they've written to the school and they've said, what do you think about Susan? And they think, oh yeah, she's doing fine, she's okay. When really, Susan's at the back of the classroom. We're in year four, say. Susan's at the back of the classroom. She's not really listening. She's stargazing out the window. It's because she's embarrassed, because she's probably got dyslexia and she's finding it really difficult to keep up with her peers, etc. But really, she's not a problem. She's not throwing chairs across the table, etc. So that they don't think she's a problem, and she's fine, in inverted brackets. So you can make the application yourself. The local authority themselves can make the application for a needs assessment. It's quite rare, but it can happen.
It's very rare. It is usually those cases where it's clear from either at birth or in very early development, the severity of need. Some local authorities in those circumstances will make the application themselves. They'll start it themselves. But in most situations, it's usually parents and schools. We tend to find when parents come to us about making applications for EHC needs assessments, it's usually where they've had a discussion with school and school hasn't quite understood the need properly. Or it might be because the school has been wrongfully informed about when they should be making EHC needs assessments. So me and Sally saying, actually it's on our kind of Instagram page, have looked at kind of myths around needs assessments. And we do see a lot of them. For instance, local authorities telling schools that they can only make an application when they've had three cycles of SEND provision in place.
Oh yeah, so, I hate that one.
Yeah, and it can be so destructive and can lead to a child not getting the support they require for much longer than possible.
Can you imagine your child going through three times through getting the same help or slightly different help, and it just watching it fail and fail and fail over and over again?
Yeah.
It's like a jump hoop exercise.
Well, usually what that leads to in those situations is someone more disengaged with learning, more unlikely to be able to display their potential. The needs assessment process, although it's 20 weeks, it's often quite a lot of delays involved anyway.
Yeah.
So the earlier you start it, the quicker you get intervention into place, the better, really.
Yeah. Well, seeing as we're on that topic, actually, we'll go through like other reasons why, you know, sometimes schools or people won't go for a needs assessment. So it's the three rounds. Sometimes they say, well, we can't go for an application yet because we have to wait for your child to be at least 3 years, 2 years behind their peers. That's another one. Or you have to have a diagnosis to make the application. None of those are true.
I've seen some absurd reasons for not doing needs assessments. I once saw in a letter saying, unless your child is within the 2% of severely disabled students or children, we won't do the needs assessment. And there's nothing in the SEND code of practice or law which says that.
No.
It's just, so I think you have the balance here. So you have what is a legal test. So when a local authority is considering doing an EHC needs assessment, they have to consider whether it may be necessary to determine your child's needs within an EHC plan.
Yeah.
In terms of legal tests, it's a very low one. may be necessary on a balance of 50-50. But often what you have is the legal position and actually the position of the code of practice, which very much supports you've got to look at a child's individual needs. You've got to look at what parents have been putting into place. So any additional provision provided at home. You've got to look at all those factors.
Type of school that they're currently going to.
Yeah, type of school. So often a local authority can say, you know, there's no proof of what provision has been put into place. And it might be that a parent has been putting into place speech and language therapy, occupational therapy, might even be paying for the learning support assistance in a classroom, might be putting into place dyslexia teaching at home. They may even be paying for an independent school themselves. And then they still get turned down for a needs assessment. What you're seeing there is the law and I suppose the code of practice of outlining what should be done versus internal local authority policy, which unfortunately in a lot of cases is basically only providing that support for what the local authority considers students with severe learning difficulties.
Yeah, severe and profound, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's how they deem it. But if we, like, moving on to the timescales, because sometimes, well, first of all, let's go on to how. How do you make an application for an education healthcare needs assessment? Now, if you're very new to this, maybe I would say, go to your local authority's website. Everybody should have the local offer. They should have a dedicated SEND page. Sometimes there is no law in relation to, or no set procedure in relation to, how an application for an education healthcare needs assessment should be made. Some local authorities have application forms. If they have application forms, by all means, fill it in, but do not feel that you are restricted to that application form. So a lot of parents and us, we do an additional letter to accompany that form as well and put it in our own format. What's quite important is to make sure that you've got a well-rounded presentation of all your child and the needs that they present with and the needs that they possibly present with as well. So if they have something that you think, well, that, you know, they really struggle with their zips, for example, put that down, because Your child's main need may be, say, a diagnosis of autism or dyslexia. But if my child's struggling with his zip or her zip or their laces or something, there may be something fine motor as well to do there. So because we are not occupational therapists, we're not speech and language therapists, we're not any therapist, you guys might be, but we're certainly not. Put that all down for the local authority, because the whole purpose of the education healthcare needs assessment is that it's to assess, it's to have a look to see if there may be a need there and if that child may need support with that. So don't forget that education is defined as anything that educates or trains. So that includes stuff like learning independent living skills, because eventually your child will need to go to secondary school, will need to be able to operate even in primary school independently throughout the classroom, to get their maths books from the cupboard, etc., or get their art supplies or whatever else it is. And fine motor skills, seeing as we're on that topic, fine motor skills is part of that, and learning how to use that properly is part of that, and it influences and affects their education. So that would all be included in a plan.
Yeah, I can agree more. I think to add to that, there's a couple of things as well. So when you're making an application for a needs assessment, it's not where your school is. So you can have a mainstream school, say, in one local authority, but you live in a different. So when you're making the application for a needs assessment, you go to the local authority where your home is registered, and you're looking at what the local offer is. So you go into the website, look at the local offer, and there'll be details of making the application for a needs assessment. Now, those application forms, as Salase was saying, are very long, and we feel are designed in a way to make them very complicated for parents to fill in. So you can always do your own letter, and a local authority has to consider that. I often find from discussions with parents and when helping them make those applications that they can actually present more of a rounded case of what their child's needs are and how they impact on them than those forms allow. So a couple of things that you should be looking at as a parent is looking at the cognition and learning section. So, you know, what is impacting on my child's ability to build their kind of abilities in core areas of the curriculum, say English, maths and science. Also looking at their ability to hold and maintain their attention within that classroom. Then I think you're looking at communication and interaction. So does my child have the language skills in order to kind of express their views and their understanding? Is my child able to keep language in their head and act upon it in line with their age? In addition to that, does my child's language issues have an impact on their ability to interact with their peers and teachers, etc.? Then you kind of move on to social, emotional, and mental health. And that can cover a number of things, but really you're looking at what are my child's needs and what impacts in those areas. So does my child's difficulties impact on their ability to make friends? Does it impact on their ability to access the community? Does my child have mental health issues, which makes it very difficult for them to access any type of traditional educational environments? Those are all aspects you'd be looking at. And then you're looking at physical and sensory. So does my child have physical needs which impact on them being able to access a school environment? So that can be difficulties accessing because a child is in a wheelchair, but it can also be things like being able to record work within the classroom. Mm-hmm. It can also be being able to understand their body around other people, so their spatial awareness. It can also be around their ability to undertake sports like everyone else.
Balance,
yes. And, you know, often I talk to parents and they'll say to me, well, my son, you know, is in a rugby team, so therefore I don't think they have motor difficulties. But there's a very big difference between using your motor skills for, say, a sport compared to, say, being able to use them to record work. I'd see myself as a key example of that. I'm very good if you want me to put me on a rugby pitch and run at someone, but if you want me to record work, I cannot keep up in terms of my peers, in terms of my written work. And that was always the case when I was at school. And then we look at sensory needs, which is often misunderstood by people. So your child's ability to cope with noise within a classroom, ability to cope with a crowded environment, and that includes in the kind of general community, so being able to go into a shopping centre or anything like that. It can be their difficulty coping with particular smells and tastes as well. All of those things can impact on a child. Now, in most cases that we are involved with, you tend to find that most children come under all of those kind of particular subheadings, as I like to think about them, as needs. So when you're considering your child's needs and you have a particular diagnosis, consider the other aspects as well. The other thing to say, and we kind of touched on it, is you actually don't need any type of diagnosis to make an application for an EHC needs assessment. To give listeners an example, when I did the application for my own son, who's autistic, he didn't have a diagnosis. We were still through the process of doing that, but we're able to outline the traits that he had and said he's on the process of having a diagnosis. But this is how it has a significant impact on him in a classroom environment. So you can put that letter together yourself. And it's also important when you're doing that is to look at other aspects. For instance, are you providing additional provision outside of school? That should be included in the application. So mm-hmm. if you're putting into place any independent provision.
And in school as well.
Yeah. And then you should also look at what your school have been doing themselves. So does your child have a SEND plan? Where is your child within the school's policy in terms of upskilling and up-leveling the provision being provided? Mm. Why hasn't that worked? If it's a case where the school say it is working and you feel it isn't, outline your reasons for why it isn't.
Yeah, and even at school, if you know everything seems okay, but your child is a completely different child when they get home, which is really common. Especially for our kids with autism, who tend to mask a lot when they're at work, when they're at school, and they come home, and you know that they kind of just explode, or they're really tired, or you know their behaviour is completely different. Put that down, explain that, because that's evidence of them masking when they are at school. So that's the application form and the application process. Now, a lot of my clients, when they first come to me, they say, well, Sally, so, you know, we're in such a sticky spot. How long is this going to take? Now, I can give you the official answer and then we'll give you the unofficial answer. The official answer is that this should take 20 weeks from the date of first application. So from when you first send the application form in to the local authority, by the time you get a finalised plan, it should be 20 weeks. That's broken down. So from when you first send the application in to when you get a decision as to whether or not the local authority agree to assess your child is 6 weeks. So I would, I always recommend to my clients and to my parents that come to me, just do a timetable and put it kind of somewhere for yourself. And maybe even tell the local authority when you send your application in. Say, I've sent the application in on this day and this is the deadlines as I see it because I've had a look at the code of practice and it says it in the regulations. So 6 weeks from the date you send the application in to when you should get a yes or no to assess. From that date, from that 6 weeks date, if it's a yes, then the local authority have 10 weeks within which to actually conduct those assessments. So in those 10 weeks, EPs, maybe a speech and language therapist, maybe an occupational therapist, someone, paediatrician, the school.
I should say for those who aren't quite there with terms that we use, so EP means an educational psychologist.
Yeah, sorry, so. EP is educational psychologist. They will contact you and they will arrange assessments for your child. They will compile those reports and we're going to have podcasts on, you know, the details of those next stages after, but just for time scale reasons. After those 10 weeks, they will use a kind of nameless, faceless panel of local authority managers and case officers will get together and use those documents along with your application form and the documents that you submitted with your application for an assessment to decide whether or not they will be issuing you with a plan. And then you'll get your formal decision. And that is then 16 weeks from the date that you first sent the application. If it's a yes, they will issue you with a plan, then they will go on to draft a plan using those documents and they'll send you a draft plan. You'll have a look at it. You'll have about 15 days to respond and they should finalise within 4 weeks. So that that makes 20 weeks. Now, if you get a no for the first two decisions and you're not happy with the decision at the end, i.e. the school or the detail in that plan, you get a right of appeal. So it's three rights of appeal that you have throughout the whole process. Now that is if everything runs tickety-boo. How often does that happen, Adam?
Very rarely. So yeah, just to summarise what Salasay was just saying there, effectively at this stage you're facing three decisions by the local authority. Each of them are appealable to the SEND tribunal, and we'll talk about that in more detail in some of the later podcasts. The first decision is a refusal to undertake a needs assessment. So if they've considered your application within that 6 weeks, they then have a decision about whether or not they'll agree to the needs assessment. If they refuse, you can appeal to the SEND tribunal against that decision. If the authority agrees to undertake the needs assessment, then they have approximately an additional 10 weeks to undertake all those assessments that Salasay was talking about. The problem is, and we tend to find it, is that the needs assessment itself is not thorough enough. So whilst they should send in all the experts that they should to understand a child's special educational needs, often they don't. So you might get an educational psychologist, but you might have identified speech and language and occupational therapy needs, and the authority doesn't do that and look at those properly. Or the educational psychologist assessment is not thorough enough. So you can find that on the end of that 10-week period that the authority refuses to issue an EHC plan. Again, that would be appealable to the SEND tribunal. If the authority did agree to issue an EHC plan, then when it issues it, approximately has another 15 days to get your views on it, and then it has another 15 days once you've responded to it to finalise it. So the problem with the EHC plan often is it's based on inadequate information, which is processed during the EHC needs assessment.
It's very woolly.
Yeah.
I always tell my clients, don't be upset, forewarning, don't be upset if the plan and the reports that come through from the local authority are really quite woolly and they kind of describe a child that maybe doesn't resonate with you or could be any child, like it just doesn't sound like your boy or your girl.
Yeah, and I think the problem is if they haven't assessed the child's needs properly, then obviously the problem with that is the provision and the plan. We'll talk about what should be in an EHC plan in one of our other podcasts, is usually insufficient in order to meet that child's needs, which either means that the school named in the plan is inappropriate, or even if it's able to meet need, it's unable to do so because the provision isn't adequate. And end of that 30 days, when the authority finalises that EHC plan, you have a further appeal to the SEND tribunal. So in most cases, parent right at the beginning of the process has those three stages of potential appeal. And I think that's the end of the process and this podcast on this subject, really.
Yeah, so that in a nutshell is kind of the first thing that you need to think about when you're at the beginning of this journey. So if you want to learn about the next stages, then please click the link for the next round of the series. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks, everyone.